The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mike Edwards with another edition of the Armchair Traveler from the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. And during the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from the National Geographic Traveler and the News and Observer. Now, before we begin our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, please let me remind you that neither the North Carolina Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles we're going to be reading. These are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. Well, you may recall in our previous Armchair Traveler, we featured part one of an 8-part series, Best of the World, 25 Trips to Take in 2020. This is from the December 2019, January 2020 issue of National Geographic Traveler, which happens to be the final issue of the magazine, which will be ceasing publication. In part one, we featured snapshot visits to scenic locations, and these were 6 locations: Guizhou, China; Whales Way, United Kingdom; Blue Lagoons in Maldives; Gilded Opulence in Puebla, Mexico; Epic Mountains in Grossglockner High Alpine Road, Austria; and the Grand Canyon National Park in Arizona. Well, today in part two of our series, we're going to make an extended visit to our 7th location, Asturias, Spain, led by travel writer Bruce Schoenfield. We've featured some articles from him in the past. Now, as a photo caption reads for the article, "Capped with snowy summits and steeped in Iberian tradition, this is a province to savor." Well, let's find out why as we join Bruce now on our tour of Asturias, Spain. "This is a meal I could eat nowhere else, it occurs to me, around the 7th course. I'm in the mountains of Asturias, and I've been served a dish of sea urchin and ham that unites the coast and peaks of this northern Spanish province in a single bite. 2 tables away, I see Jose Antelo raise his fork in triumph. Antelo works as an air traffic controller in Barcelona. His brother Luis is a superior court judge in Madrid. They live in 2 of Europe's top restaurant cities. They can enjoy memorable meals night after night without ever boarding a plane. But 3 or 4 times a year, they meet to eat in Asturias." Asturias? Well, this autonomous region of Spain, lying along the Bay of Biscayne, dense with trees that run up hillsides, dotted by wild marshland and scalloped with tidy beaches, isn't located between Madrid and Barcelona. It's hundreds of miles from either. When I mention that, Jose laughs. "I'm sure you know why we come," he says. "Nowhere else in Spain can you find so many flavors, such incredible variety in such a small area. It is like an entire country." Well, we're dining at Casa Marcial, housed in an old Spanish restaurant, or mansion, I should say, or casona, decorated with window boxes and topped by a barrel-tiled roof. The restaurant sits at the top of the winding road in La Cigar, a mountain village that smells of pine. The coast is 6 miles to the north as the Asturian wood pigeon flies, but La Cigar remains so deeply embedded in the hilly, heavily forested interior of the region that I'm told many of its residents spend their entire childhoods without ever seeing the water. The Manzano family opened Casa Marcial in the middle of the last century as a general store selling olive oil, cider, cattle feed, even clothing. In 1993, 22-year-old Nacho Manzano, the son of the owners, returned from the coast to start a restaurant. Gastronomes such as the Antelos love Casa Marcial, which has been awarded 2 Michelin stars. So do locals who don't dress up to eat there, but nobody more admires its modern Asturian cuisine, fresh, briny seafood such as razor clams, but also the thick bean stews of the mountain villages, so pure and perfectly rendered, and other chefs who really enjoy it. On this November night, 6 chefs from across Spain have gathered to celebrate the restaurant's 25th anniversary. They aren't just paying homage. They are actually cooking for Nacho and about 50 of us diners. We eat plate after plate of food, more ham, roasted rabbit from the hills around the restaurant, and the salty, rubbery sea cucumbers that I've only had along the Spanish coast. By the time I head back over the mountain to my hotel in seaside Gijon, we're nearly 5 hours into tomorrow. Walking in the drizzle by the seawall, where on summer days surfers congregate, I pass a rowboat filled with pre-dawn fishermen. When I look around at where I am and remember the mountain village I just left, Jose Antelo's description hits home. Asturias is like an entire country. Returning to the region for the first time in years, I'd driven north from Madrid a few days before. By the time I hit the A66 highway, the mesa around me had been flat and brown for hours. At the northern edge of the province of León, I entered the Negrón Tunnel and emerged somewhere else, a land all its own. The highway curved through a valley rimmed with tall pines past bulbous rock formations atop vertiginous slopes. I saw homes with picture windows cantilevered over stone-paved streets and ancient granaries perched on stilts. At times, what I was seeing looked more like Ireland than Spain. There had been no official sign of demarcation when I passed from León to Asturias. It didn't matter. It didn't need one. A Tale of Two Cities. I was heading for the Asturian capital of Oviedo, a compact city of roughly 220,000 residents separated from the slightly larger Gijon by rapidly encroaching suburbs. Each city has a proprietary social scene. You can be a VIP in one and all but unknown in the other. Oviedo has the better museums. Gijon has the beach. Twice a year, the Sporting Gijón and the Real Oviedo soccer teams bring the rivalry to life before a full stadium. Most visitors come upon Oviedo first. They seek out some of the best pre-Romanesque architecture in the world. 14 preserved buildings, including the tall, narrow 9th-century palace church complex of Santa Maria del Naranco. I make a pilgrimage there as soon as I arrive. I enter a vaulted room made of stones the color of milk-clouded coffee. Only one other person is here. The windows are cut thick into the walls of the building, their shutters flung open to the breeze. I peer over a grove of trees and see the city spread out below. Within the hour, I'm making my way through Oviedo and find, sculptures it seems, on almost every corner. More than 100 adorn the capital. Before I reach my hotel, I pass La Maternidad, a rounded woman with an equally rounded child by Colombian sculptor Fernando Botero, then Miguel Ortiz Berrocal's El Diestro, a metallic rendering of a bullfighter's torso. Later, in a residential neighborhood, I'll discover a conference center and office building designed by Santiago Calatrava that looks like a massive winged creature to take flight. The next day, I'll be transfixed by El Regreso de William B. Arensberg, a statue of a trench coat friend of artist Eduardo Urquilo, surrounded by suitcases and sporting a bemused expression as he gazes at the city's cathedral. Oviedo's artistic awakening has happened only over the last generation, just as Nacho Manzano started drawing international attention to his small restaurant in the mountains. The timing is no coincidence. Before then, we didn't think Asturias had much to offer, explains Esther Manzano, Nacho's sister, who has her own restaurant, La Cigar, in the center of Gijon. We didn't believe in ourselves. We didn't have fantastic weather. We were very hard to get to, a long drive from anywhere. There were no flights. We just assumed nobody would want to come, she says. Then two things happened. Europe's new bargain airlines began flying intrepid tourists here in the late 1990s, and Woody Allen's 2008 film, Vicky Cristina Barcelona, sent its characters to Oviedo for a week, causing filmgoers around the world to turn to each other in surprise. Why would anyone leave Barcelona to visit Asturias? Well, Woody Allen told the world we exist, Esther says. He opened the world's eyes, but he also opened our eyes. A statue of the controversial writer-director stands off Cali Uraya. Tourism has helped raise the standard of living in Asturias, giving restaurants like those run by Nacho and Esther Manzano a way to thrive. But it hasn't changed the nature of the place. Spain entertained more than 80 million visitors last year, enough to overrun many of its best-known places. Barcelona has become a set piece far from the raucous port town it used to be. Madrid seems like an international shopping mall. Asturias, however, remains regional, strong-flavored, authentic. Menus in English are hard to find in Oviedo, and until recently they were all but absent elsewhere in the region. Jose Andres, the Asturian-born Washington, D.C.-based chef who has become a global sensation, wants to open a restaurant not far from where he lived as a child. If he does, I'm betting it won't have an English menu either. While Asturias' two largest cities are polar opposites, Oviedo, like many inland cities, tends to be insular, conservative, overtly polite, and socially inaccessible. Gijón is a port town, working class and occasionally profane, but open to the sea and new ideas. Oviedo has an opera house and a full program to fill it. Gijón prefers its series of avant-garde festivals. I'm pleased that one of those festivals, Jazz Chichon, is under the way at the Teatro Jovellanos, which is when I arrive. I buy a ticket to see the Portico Quartet, an experimental band that was nominated for Britain's Mercury Prize. Other headliners will include the playful Spanish group El Viaje del Swing, the Journey of Swing. It's easy to spot the blazing neon sign for Teatro Jovellanos, mounted high above the pedestrian mall of Paseo Begonia. Inaugurated in 1899, the theater was renovated shortly after the fall of ruler Francisco Franco in 1975 and bought by Gijón in 1995. It has served as a cultural centerpiece since. I find Tonio Criado, the festival's director, standing in the lobby underneath an enormous crystal chandelier. Criado grew up in a small inland town near Cangas de Onís before moving to Gijón. Now he wouldn't live anywhere else. It's the youngest city in the region and the freshest, he says. You'll find that our music, our cuisine, and our way of life. When I ask him whether he feels more Spanish or Asturian, he doesn't hesitate. Oh, Asturian, he says. But really, I am from Gijón. What we are doing here couldn't happen in Oviedo. The following morning, I visit the Museum of the Asturian People, which sits just east of downtown Gijón. It sounds like a Cold War tourist attraction in an Eastern Bloc capital, but actually it's a recreation of a traditional Asturian village. The grounds include a 17th-century peasant house, a covered alley where the recreational bowling game called Quadrieta is played, a bagpipe museum. Bagpipes are common in musical instrument in Asturias and Galicia, and several of the granaries called Oreros that are ubiquitous in the area. Inside the exhibition space, the topic of the day is food. I am astonished to see how rudimentary the kitchens were, even in urban areas, into the 1950s and 1960s. Many of the dishes made in those kitchens are now served at Esther Manzano's restaurant, La Cigar, named after the Manzano's hometown. A modern glass box attached to the museum. The restaurant isn't officially affiliated with it, but their missions are aligned. If Casa Machel is where the Manzano family adds an Asturian element to high gastronomy, La Cigar rewards Asturians with deliciously familiar food amid Gijón's clamor. The idea was to have local diners taste quintessential versions of dishes they've been eating all their lives, such as arroz con pito, a version of chicken, rice, and red pepper that every Asturian remembers from childhood. Dishes of the home, Esther declares, served in a restaurant. Town and country. Like San Francisco and Scotland, bad weather suits Asturias. I leave Gijón and head east along the coast under a steady drizzle. In August, Riba de Sella attracts Spaniards who are desperate for a respite from oppressive heat. In November, with rain misting a cool morning, it becomes a particularly lovely local fishing village. Kids splash through the puddles and streets. Adults walk dogs. Shop owners stand in the doorways, greeting friends. Not far away is the Tito Bustillo Cave, site of one of the more remarkable discoveries of the last century. In 1968, a group of amateur spelunkers realized that falling rocks many centuries before had sealed an opening of a cave. They returned with full gear and managed to make their way inside. When they did, they were surprised to discover that one cave opened into another, and then another. On the walls, they found a magnificent series of Cro-Magnon cave drawings, dating back more than 10,000 years. Another mysterious drawing was made some 30,000 years ago, according to carbon dating. Although the site has been validated by waves of experts, its existence continues to raise more questions than have been answered. Why, I find myself wondering, were drawings made in precisely the same place some 20,000 years apart? I ponder that over lunch, 15 minutes to the north, on a spit of beach. And this is Giyu Ma Restaurant, a glorified shack marked by a huge plastic kingfish mounted over the doorway. Abel Alvarez, chef and owner, has been grilling fish here since 2007. His menu consists of whatever the boats have brought in that day, supplemented by seafood and metal tins that Alvarez has preserved himself. There's no meat of any kind, nor rice or potatoes, just seafood and local vegetables and excellent bread rolls. I eat razor clams and sardines, then grilled cockles and kingfish. I drink Asturian wine, which barely existed a decade ago, from the inland winery Dominio del Urregalo, the best of the few producers clustered in the western side of the province. The blend of three local red grape varieties has the stony freshness that I usually associate with cool climate whites, crisp and salty. It tastes like the sea. Rain is falling again. When I step outside, I see a vivid rainbow arcing from the trees atop the steep hills down to the water. Then I pivot inland. I stop in the town of Cangas de Onís, where much-photographed Roman bridge spans an unhurried stream. From the next morning, it's a short trip to Covadonga, which is one of the most historic spots in Spain. You could make the argument that modern Spain began when the advance of the Moors was halted here by the Visigothan nobleman Pelagius, the founder of the Kingdom of Asturias in 1718. Spaniards needed nearly 800 years more before they finally managed to expel the invaders, but the Battle of Covadonga marked the start of the reversal. The natural setting is breathtaking, with a serpentine road leading up a canyon, past a waterfall, and then a small shrine. At the top, shimmering above the mist, rises the majestic pink stone Basilica of Santa Maria del Real de Covadonga. And you can say Covadonga or Covadonga, depending on which Spanish dialect you prefer. Anyway, continuing, I visited before, writes the author, but I hadn't taken the time to drive to the lakes above Covadonga and the Picos de Europa, Peaks of Europe National Park. Now up another winding road I go, bound for those lakes. Trees fall away and the view opens to a wide sky of cotton ball clouds. Then I hear bells. They start softly, but soon their metallic jangle has drowned out the car radio. I round a bend and see sheep, what looks like several hundred of them, painstakingly crossing the road in front of a line of stopped cars. I park and walk into the nearby brush, inhaling air so fresh it sends a jolt of sharpness into my chest. The spiky peaks of the mountain silently surround me from the distance. All I hear is the din of the sheep bells, sounding like church bells ringing at high noon. A driver honks a horn in frustration, but that only makes the sheep stop in their tracks. With great deliberation, they look around. Satisfied that they can proceed, they resume their shuffle. Eventually, the stragglers get across. By now, the traffic probably snakes around the bend and halfway down the mountain. I see the cars start to move, but I can't walk back just yet. The bells clank and the air crackles and the peaks look like cathedral spires. Around me is a sea of sheep with no shepherd in sight. I've never been anywhere like this. I don't want to leave. By the way, this article by Bruce Schoenfeld marks his third visit to the region of Asturias, and included in the article are some travel-wise tips. Should you like to consider traveling there, let's see what they offer. First, under the column of What to Know, Asturias is part of Green Spain, a designation reflecting the province's pristine, verdant landscapes and cooler, wetter climate. A network of trails covers the region, headlined by the Camino del Norte, the quieter northern branch of Spain's famous Camino de Santiago, running from the French border to Santiago de Compostela. It skirts such Asturian highlights as the tidal blowholes of Vidiago and the Paleolithic Tito Bustillo Cave. Now, places to eat, we have the Casa Marcial. This restaurant in the rural village of the Arriondas has earned 2 Michelin stars by offering modern takes on traditional Asturian cuisine, spinning out dishes like sea urchin asparagus and celery panna cotta. You can learn more online about Casa Marcial at casamarcial.com, C-A-S-A-M-A-R-C-I-A-L, casamarcial.com. And then we have the Gueyu Mar. Gueyu is spelled G-U-E-Y-U, Gueyu Mar. 1 block from the beach in Rabadasella, restaurant Gueyu Mar ushers the sea right across the threshold with a fish and shellfish-dominated menu that includes lobster, razor clams, gooseneck barnacles, baby squid, and fresh fish prepared by 2 dozen ways. Check it all out at gueyumar.es, gueyumar.es. Then we have Las Cigars, you heard in the article. Esther Manzano's Michelin-starred Gijon Stronghold treats diners to sea bass and with cider cream, beets, and seaweed, and scrambled eggs with cabrales cheese. Okay, cave-aged Cabrales cheese. I was misreading that. It was one word on one page and then another. Here we go. Cave-aged Cabrales cheese. Wow. Anyway, lacigar.es will get you more information online. And by the way, Gijon, as I keep pronouncing, is actually spelled G-I-J-O-N, but in Spanish pronounced Gijon. And where to stay? Well, we have 3 cables. C-A-B-O-S. This modern meets rustic hotel gazes over 3 capes, therefore the word gables, from coastal cliffs west of Oviedo, which is spelled O-V-I-E-D-O. 6th-century old farmhouse rooms feature beamed ceilings, cowhide chairs, and patterned tile work. Bicycles and kites are free for hotel guests. Check it all out at Hotel Rural, the number 3 cables, C-A-B-O-S again, .com. HotelRural3Cables.com. Then we have La Quesona del Viante. Viajante. Ideally located near the Picos de Europa National Park in Asturias cities, the 9-room Casona del Viajante is a historic Casa Indiano, or 19th-century mansion built by former Asturian expats and distinguished by its Art Nouveau touches. Stained glass windows and an original hand-carved staircase lead to a veranda breakfast, and you can try the fresh fruit grown on-site. La Casona, which is L-A-C-A-S-O-N-A, La Casona del Viajante.com, and del, D-E-L, and then Viajante, V-I-A-J-A-N-T-E. That's La Casona del Viajante.com for more information online. And a note from Nat Geo, you can see Europe's oldest known fossils in the medieval Asturian town of Centella del Mar on the National Geographic 10-day Human Origins Expedition, which covers southwestern France and northern Spain. You can go online to learn more about this one, natgeoexpeditions.com/explore. Once again, that's natgeoexpeditions.com/explore. Wow, lots of fun in Spain, huh? And on our next Armchair Traveler, we're going to make some more snapshot visits to locations 7 through 11 in Part 3 of our 8-part series, Best of the World, 25 Trips to Take in 2020, and we hope you can join us for the series. Well, next, we're going to look at some lodges that blend activity and relaxation. This is written by travel writer Lena Work Hayes of FamilyTravel.com. The article appeared in the December 22, 2019 issue of the News and Observer. Family-friendly lodges provide an ideal venue for your personal blend of active pursuits and relaxation. Here are 5 places you want to visit time and time again. The Lodge at Kay Creek near San Ignacio, Belize. Kay is spelled C-H-A-A. It's kind of a strange pronunciation. Some people might say cha, but K is also possible because of the hard sound of C-H. Tucked within a 365-acre private rainforest paradise in the picturesque foothills of the Maya Mountains, K Creek provides the ideal home base for your family's exploration of the K.O. District. A region where cave tubing, archaeological sites, horseback riding, and zip lining will lure you from the comfort of your palm-thatched cottage or treetop suite. While at the Riverside Eco Lodge, don't miss the early morning birdwatching tours, the Hilltop Spa, the Blue Morpho Butterfly Farm, and the Medicine Trail, where you'll learn about native plants to provide globally significant remedies. And you can stay in treetop villas, cottages, or glamping-style camp casitas. Check it all out at kcaacreek.com, C-H-A-A-creek.com. And then we have Timberline Lodge, Mount Hood, Oregon, located in Oregon's Mount Hood National Forest, sitting high on the shoulder of the iconic peak at 6,000 feet. This magnificent lodge was built at the height of the Great Depression by unemployed craftspeople hired by the Federal Works Progress Administration. Completed in 1937, the lodge has long served as the centerpiece of a mountain playground. The land and historic lodge are still owned by the U.S. Forest Service, but the National Historic Landmark Lodge has been family-operated since 1955. Families return year after year to ski, hike, dine, mountain bike, learn about the local flora and fauna, and to simply enjoy the high-altitude natural beauty. You can check it out at TimberlineLodge.com, TimberlineLodge.com. Then we have Many Glacier Hotel, Glacier National Park. There are a few places on the planet as stunning as Glacier National Park, and one would argue that the historic Many Glacier Hotel is the ideal venue from which to appreciate the vast, astonishing landscape. Located on the shores of Swift Current Lake with jagged peaks as a backdrop, the iconic hotel was built by the Great Northern Railway in 1914 to lure tourists to the Wild West. Today, visitors from around the world find their way to this northwestern corner of Montana, eager to see the disappearing glaciers, hike aside azure-colored lakes, and to catch the glimpse of the resident wildlife. This secluded five-story hotel offers visitors a window into the past with old-world-style guest rooms and Swiss Alpine theme. While dedicated to honoring its historic roots, the 214-room gem has undergone a multi-million-dollar renovation that included remodeling rooms, updating furniture and lighting, and restoring the dining room to historic standards. In addition to world-class biking, red bus tours, boat cruises, horseback rides, and evening ranger programs are offered in an unparalleled lakeside setting, and you need to book well in advance. You can check it all out at visitmontana.com, visitmontana.com, or glaciernationalparklodges.com, glaciernationalparklodges.com. Then we have the Grand View Lodge in Brainerd, Minnesota. Visit this historic lodge on Gull Lake for a family-centric getaway expanding over 750 acres. The kids will burn off energy cross-country skiing, playing hockey, skating, tubing, or swimming in the indoor pool. You can go for sleigh rides, relax in the hot tub, and play games in your garden cottage, cabin, or lodge rooms. A four-season vacation destination, the lodge is a popular summer spot for lake activities, golf, and hiking. It's all available online at GrandviewLodge.com, GrandviewLodge.com. Finally, Sundance Mountain Resort, Sundance, Utah. That's synonymous, of course, with the famous Sundance Film Festival, a Robert Redford creation. You'll find it difficult to emerge from the cozy lodge warmed by a roaring fire or your cabin crafted from indigenous materials. But when you do, choose from cross-country and snowshoe trails that run deep into the woods or sunlit downhill runs on the slopes of Mount Timpanogos. Founded by filmmaker and conservationist Robert Redford, the resort offers family-friendly pottery, beading, and printmaking classes in the art shack, winter fly fishing, and dining menus with an emphasis on organic and locally sourced ingredients. You can check this one out at SundanceResort.com. Again, that's SundanceResort.com, and that should also have information on the Sundance Film Festival, should that interest you as well. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Armchair Traveler. Hope that you'll be listening next time. I'm Mike Edwards, and I've been reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. I remind you the content of our program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Comments and questions may be directed to 919-832-5138. Bye-bye.